Municipal Utility Committee, or Commission meeting to order here. Today is Monday, October 23rd, 11:45 a.m. Robert Scott, do we have you on the line with us today?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Does anybody have any items to add to the agenda today? Not, I'd be looking for a resolution to approve the consent agenda, including the minutes from our last meeting, as well as the payment of bills.
I'll make a resolution to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
We have a resolution and a second. Anybody have any questions? John, if I could have you maybe turn us to page 7, I believe it is, and just run through the rail lease there that we've got.
Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. On page 7, we have one bill that I'd like to point out. It's our railroad management for $17,208. That's an annual payment to the railroad. A while back, or 2 years back, if you recall, we talked about railroad leases, power line crossing, water main crossings being exempt from, or they fall under the minimum payment to the railroad for leases. This is not one of those agreements that fall within the statutory guidelines for having limited fees tied to it. This easement is our easement for 69 line that runs basically from 7th, 8th Street here all the way to the east end of town. It runs parallel with the railroad company, so it's an annual payment.
Okay. And then also at the bottom of page 7, I see that we've purchased some additional inventory parts for the wind turbine. Perhaps John Folkadol, I guess one question I would have, are we getting close to getting the inventory that we want or need, or do we still have a ways to go?
Thank you for that question, Commissioner Mattern. Kind of yes and no. Group of parts that we received were very valuable parts. We've already used a significant fraction of them. We've been replacing bladders, for example, that are quite expensive at $500 each. We had a pump in that shipment that we used to repair the hydraulic problem that we had recently. So we're very pleased with the parts that we've got. However, there are still a number of parts that we'd like to obtain from the Duke Wind Warehouse in Guymon, Oklahoma. I do not have a list or a parts quote for any of that, those parts yet. But hopefully we'll get a list of equal value that we can put in our storeroom for the inevitable failures.
John, are you finding that we're kind of competing with others for some of those parts, or not really?
Not at this point. It's my understanding that most of the, that all of the potential for the sale has pretty much fallen through. In Guymon, Oklahoma, the sale of the wind farm down there, which would include the warehouse and all of the parts. So it's my understanding that one of the DeWind representatives is working with Chad Sander to come up with a list of parts for us to look at that DeWind would be willing to sell us out of their warehouse. Eva. Huge number, a huge amount of inventory there.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have any other questions on either the minutes or the bill payments?
Commissioner Mattern?
Yeah.
Maybe this question's for John, but on page 4, second item down, Felon McCord, remind me the energy consulting contract that we have. I'm blanking on that one.
That's a company that Grace, basically Chris and Michelle work with for our energy supply scheduling.
Okay.
And if you want more details, I turn it over to Michelle to provide some details regarding what they all do assist us with.
I knew it was for I knew we had a contract for scheduling. I just had forgotten the name on it, so yeah. That's all I need. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Anybody else? All right, with that, Beth, if you could do a roll. Thank you.
Certainly. Commissioner Holtz?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Mabou?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, next item on the agenda, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Weber for an update on labor minutes.
Thank you. Yes, the Labor Committee met Friday, October 13th at 12 o'clock. I'm going to summarize a lot of this. What's coming up are two negotiation sessions to review our labor contract. Those sessions have been scheduled for October 24th, and November 7th. So beginning tomorrow, we'll begin negotiations. We will meet as a committee, labor committee, after this meeting to discuss some further things before tomorrow as well. Staff presented an initial offer to us as a starting point for the negotiations. The committee reviewed these and advised General Manager Heron to proceed with the strategy as a starting point. The decommissioning package that was previously presented to the union was approved by the union, so we received a message from them that that was approved as is. And then when we do begin negotiations tomorrow, the Labor Committee asked that our labor attorney be on standby for any questions, just not in attendance. So two big sessions coming up for negotiations starting tomorrow.
Excellent. Anybody have any questions on those minutes? Otherwise, I would look for a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve the Labor Committee minutes.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes. All right. With that, we have a memorandum of agreement. And Commissioner Weber, do you want to run into that real quick with us for a resolution on that, or perhaps John? Turn it over to John.
Commissioner Weber, want me to take?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Madden. What you have in your packet today is a MOA. It is the first document which spells out what our decommissioning package consists of. If you go about halfway down or three-fourths of the way down, you'll see the exhibits that go along with it. It's four exhibits. One, the first exhibit A is definitions. The second one is a severance package. The third one is a performance incentive, and then others, items that were addressed that are in the contract, etc. If you scroll through it, the first one is Exhibit A. I don't know if anyone has any questions on that, but that's basically definitions defining what district heat and power plant employees are, and then eligible employees as well, and then the decommissioning period. Then when you look at the severance package itself, that's Exhibit B. That is based on years of service with percentage of salary starting out, it's broken down years 1 through 5 and then years 6+. And then towards the bottom of the page, you will see that there's also a stipend for their licenses that they hold there that are required to run the plant. Then the next, we go on to Exhibit C, is the performance incentive. And the performance incentive consists of the dollars from the severance package if an employee were to obtain employment elsewhere prior to July 1st of 2020. Those dollars would be split between the utility commission and the employee. As an example, if an employee were to quit between now and July 1st, 2020, and we did not have to replace that employee, Mr. Fokadal and the staff over there, if they determine that they can run the plant without replacing, those dollars would go into that performance bucket and be split between the remaining employees on July 1st of 2020. So that's a performance incentive. We understand that there's going to be additional work, additional challenges on the employee side. So in addition to additional overtime, there's a little additional perk for the employees to pick up the additional workload that will be required to move us to July 1st of 2020. And then the other piece that's part of it is referred to as, so like, can move here, is referred to as resolution that's going to or need to be adopted by the commission here today. And basically, that resolution is adopting our decommissioning package. So with that said, I'll turn it back over to Commissioner Weber to add any additional information I may have overlooked here.
I have nothing additional.
All right, with that information, we do have a potential resolution before us. I guess at this point, I would entertain if anybody wanted to enter that resolution.
Well, I'll bring that resolution. Is that...
That is sufficient. Do we have a second?
Yeah. I'll second.
All right, so we do have a resolution and a second to proceed with the agreement that we have before us. My understanding is that the union has looked at this and approved the information that we've got here as well. Any discussion on this resolution at all?
Commissioner Manor, if I can share some additional information that's not in the resolution of the decommissioning packet. As a labor committee and staff looked and worked with the union on this, one thing that I would like to point out that the dollar amounts that are there that are all part of this decommissioning package will only be paid out to those employees that are here that have not obtained employment with WMU. So we have a number of positions here that we're hoping that we can fill these. We're also working with the city, so any employee, as we had this week, the city has hired one of our employees, so that individual would not be entitled to this decommissioning package either. So we're working with the city in addition to our position. So the dollars we see here, this is just one more tool so that we can hang on to the people that we need until July 1st, 2020. Because it is paramount that we provide district heat to our district heat customers. So this is one way that we can do that. So.
Any other questions or discussion? All right, seeing none, Beth, if you could do roll.
Certainly. Commissioner DeBleek?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Mabul?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
Holtz?
Aye.
And that does pass. Thank you. All right, to item number three, I'll do a quick review of the Planning Committee minutes from last week. The Planning Committee did meet on Monday, October 16th at noon. First item for discussion was the Priam substation and wetland mitigation. This was just a brief update for information only. As has been previously presented to this commission, we do have some areas of wetland that would be impacted for the new Priam substation. It's a little under half an acre. In order to mitigate that, we're looking at purchasing some additional wetland out of a bank, if you will. We'd have to purchase twice as much as what we would be impacting at a cost of about $56,000 and some change. And it is recommendation that we're going to be proceeding with that. That's already been previously approved, so that was for information only. Our next item for discussion was firming up gas prices. It's the natural gas for the power plant. As we're shifting gears here the next couple of years and working on the decommissioning, we wanted to make sure that we have stable gas supply to be able to supplement any coal use for running the power plant over there. This is a discussion that's been in the works for a little bit of time. However, we found out from CenterPoint Energy that they are not able to, due to other commitments, to be able to fill that role. So they are looking at helping us acquire a third party who would be able to fulfill our needs for future gas supply there so that we can firm up that contract. And again, that was for information only as well. From there, we went into the property that's coming up available for sale adjacent to the property that we own here at the utilities. We did have quite a bit of discussion on this particular topic, and we're going to get into some further discussion here after this update, so I won't get into a whole lot of detail other than to say that after all the information that was presented to us, we felt it was important to bring all of that back to the full commission so that we can have some discussion on what we want to do regarding that property and kind of the future of any potential building and what we're looking at doing there for the future of the utilities. So I won't get into a whole lot more detail on that until our follow-up discussion on that piece. From there, we went into rate adjustments. We were presented with five different scenarios to consider, three of them for electric, two of them for water. This ties into what we're going to be discussing with the City Council at our joint meeting next week. However, we wanted to kind of establish a base of how we want that discussion to go and what we're interested in trying to pursue. We did look at some graphs and how it's going to impact our customers and their bills. One kind of nice thing to note is that as our energy acquisition adjustment will be going down next year, that'll help make rates a little easier to absorb if we're looking at a rate adjustment, which we are recommending that we're going to have to proceed with. As we look out into the future of where our income is going to be and our kind of the net result of that, we realize that we're going to be short on a lot of these projects that we have coming up, and so we need to supplement that with some rate increases. Our recommendation for the discussion next week is that we believe on the Planning Committee that we should probably consider a combination of Scenario 1 and Scenario 4, which includes a line item on the bills for the franchise fee, which we've previously discussed. The amount that we selected was the $3 million value over a two-year period. It would be $2 million allotment in 2018 and an additional $1 million in 2019 that would be line itemed. That $3 million total includes about $2.15 million that we are sending over in cash to the city as part of the pilot program. The balance is kind of what we do as in-kind services, if you will, to take care of street lighting and some water mains. And so that would help negate any actual rate increase directly on the electric side and would reduce what we would have to increase on the water side by 5 and 5 instead of 10 and 10 for the next 2 years there. So we'll have further discussion on that with the city council next week. That'll be our recommendation on that. One thing that I'm going to be presenting here after the minutes is we are looking at needing to move forward with our timeline on the rate adjustments, and as a result, we do need to set a public hearing sooner than later, and so we're going to be requesting that we do that following the minutes here, looking at a public hearing for rates in November. From there, we had a brief update on strategic planning, organizational opportunities. I have to be quite vague on this particular opportunity. It's very fluid right now, but we were just informed that there might be an opportunity for us to expand some of the business of what we do and possibly aid with another facility, I'll say. I guess I'll leave it at that. But again, it was very preliminary. We were just given a very brief update on that. And if anything should come out of that or if there's more that we need to explore, we'll bring that forward at that time. With that, we had a miscellaneous update, two additional updates. One was the next quarterly update for our strategic plan is scheduled to be presented in December. I believe it will be the last meeting in December for the commission. And we also had a brief discussion about doing an annual commissioner self-evaluation, just to kind of help each of us better understand our responsibilities and our role as commissioners. This is something that the APPA recommends that public utilities do, and they do have some sort of a template that we would probably follow as well for those evaluation forms. With that, we adjourned at 1:24, and I would open it for questions. Seeing none, I would enter a motion to approve the minutes as I presented them.
A second.
The motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? That passes. All right. With that, we are also looking at doing a public hearing on November 13th to discuss rate adjustments. We don't need to decide today exactly which formula we would be going with. I think we'll need to come up with that decision after our meeting with the City Council next week, but we do need to try and get a date set if we're going to stick with the timeline on moving this forward. And so I would offer a motion to set a public hearing for November 13th.
A second.
Motion and a second. Any questions or discussion?
Let's see. Is that during our regularly scheduled commission meeting?
Yep.
Okay.
John, anything to add to that at all?
No, Commissioner Matter.
Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? And that passes as well. All right, item number four, the adjacent property that's coming up for sale. I'm going to lead that over to Kevin.
Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. Got on the PowerPoint on the screen as well as in your devices, the information on the adjacent property. As stated, we were approached by a local realtor just to do a quick review regarding property that was to be listed in the near future. It's the Oak Grove Holdings property, just east of our current location. They wanted to give us first crack at it since they knew that we had been interested in the past in adjacent properties. So we held a discussion at the planning committee meeting, where, as Justin mentioned before, they felt that we should bring some additional information back to the local commission for discussion and review. So one of those items is we wanted to see a layout of our existing properties, how they're being used, and what we currently own. As you see on the map there in the green section, actually consists of, I believe it's four actual parcels that we own. The former Jerry's Liquor Store property and the former Taco John's are two parcels each. We own the four on the end of that block. The additional numbered 1 through 6 are properties that we do not own. The yellow shaded areas, of course, are items that will remain regardless of what happens for infrastructure, the substations and such. And then it shows how we're using some of the additional properties along the railroad yard and storage yards. The next slide gets into detail on the remaining 6 properties that we do not own. Property 1 is 2 parcels with 3 multi-unit apartment buildings on it. Also included the tax valuation, estimated tax or property tax value of each property, and then we added in, as we discussed at the planning committee meeting, a 15% increase to get us an approximate purchase price if we were to purchase. So that's where those numbers come in. And then most of these properties would have a relocation expense. We discussed at the meeting as well, is if we were to purchase those properties, we would be responsible for moving those tenants or assisting them with replacing the property. Also business relocation expense, loss of business expenses, those sorts of things. The property 2, which we're talking about, is the Oak Grove Holdings. It's a concrete block warehouse. The property is to be listed for $75,000. And then you can see the valuation of the building plus 15% is just under that. So they're not too far out of line with their asking price. There would be no additional expenses other than demolition on that property. 3 and 4 are single family homes as shown. Property 5 on the map is actually 2 parcels. Currently is a laundromat and some retail spaces. I believe there's a church occupying that former convenience store. And property 6, the Employment Plus property, is business use and has a basement apartment. So most, all of those except for property 2, the Oak Grove Holdings building, would have additional expenses of relocation. There also would be potential, if the commission chose to continue and for future expansion on these properties, we would have the potential of an imminent domain process and expenses of the properties that are not currently for sale or that we don't currently own. So all said, the total value of all properties, not including the additional relocation, business loss, potential imminent domain or demolition costs, is $961,630 approximately. So adding in, we didn't really have a way of, I don't think that there's a way currently to estimate those additional expenses at this time. questions on that information before I move forward? Okay. The next slide is showing our underground utilities. Asked for a review of what is underground and the challenges that it presents to work operating in these adjacent properties. The two interceptor sewer lines that come from the north, and then they meet up with the forest main that runs from east to west down Benson Avenue. And then there's two natural gas mains, an 8-inch running down Pacific and a 3-inch that goes down Benson. And then Benson also has a ton of feeder lines and phone and cable and fiber and whatnot. Be busy street there. This map is representing basically showing those areas that we just talked about. Everything in red is either an area that we are not allowed to build over or is a setback. On the bottom of the screen, there's a 50-foot setback from the back of the right-of-way along Highway 12 on the north side of that block that is zoned general business. There's a 25-foot setback. Going across the street, that is zoned industrial. And it would jump to a 30-foot setback, and the same all the way on the west end along 10th Street, 25-foot on the south side, and 30-foot north of Benson Avenue. Once again, it shows the remaining infrastructure, and then taking out everything that we are not allowed to build on or that has a setback of some sort or utility easement that leaves us with the approximate square footage in the green boxes, just based off Google Maps, what's available to us, maximum square footage in those areas. Kind of thinking back to our facility studies with the approximate size of the building, the reminder that the facility study, I believe, indicated about 93,000, and some of that is included power plant garage, some of those spaces, and then some overlap. We felt as staff that a building in the 70 to 80,000 square foot range is going to be more realistic. So if we were to pursue doing that, the space is there, but we would be split up, as you can see, into probably for sure two, if not three different separate buildings again. And anybody, any questions on either of these that I can address? Okay. So then in review, we reviewed the property tax value regarding the property for sale with an asking price of 75. It has a taxable market value of 63.7. Staff feels that after purchase of the property and demolition costs, that the property would then be valued on what was left and would be the empty lot, therefore making that a poor investment choice, and that is not in the best interest of the utility to purchase said property. And as outlined in the 2010 and 2016 facility study and update, it's the best interest of the utility to be in one facility from an operational efficiency standpoint, and also that Wilmery Municipal Utilities is an industrial enterprise and feel that we belong in said area. The adjacent properties that we're talking about are better suited to retail and private development. Staff feels that after further review of the existing adjacent properties, along with the challenges and additional costs that are present, that an outside property that better suits its need is warranted. And staff feels that our existing owned parcels be further vetted for potential sale moving forward. So, twofold recommendation, I guess, as we've discussed at the Planning Committee.
Thank you, Kevin. Does anybody have any questions right now, Kevin? Just a little additional background and the reason I kind of wanted to bring this forward to the full commission, the history with this project goes back, I think, well beyond all of us actually on the commission currently. And previous commissions have really kind of set forward that their desire was that if we're doing something different with a new building facility, that it be done on this property in this area. And so kind of all the things that we've been doing moving forward have kind of kept that in mind. But now looking at the new information that's being brought forward and some of the concerns that we have with that, for the first time, we're really looking seriously at saying, okay, this may not be feasible to proceed with utilizing our current available property in this section of town to do this on. So I wanted to bring that forward and realize that if we do decline the purchase of this particular building at this time, we're really kind of establishing that new precedent moving forward, that perhaps this isn't going to be the area for the new facility. And so I wanted to make sure that we fully had a discussion as a commission to make sure that that is indeed the right way to go. Kind of our leaning at the planning committee was that, yes, this does make sense, that we probably should turn down this property and no longer look at pursuing trying to acquire the rest of the blocks. As you can see on the chart that was in our packet here, we still have quite a bit of property that we need to acquire. And, you know, whether or not that's feasible may be irrelevant if we don't really have the space to make this work here anyway. So with that kind of background, I guess I would open it up for discussion amongst the commission. If you guys had questions or thoughts on this recommendation.
Commissioner Mattern?
Yeah, Commissioner Holmes.
Thank you, Kevin, for putting this together. Could you go back to the graphic you had before this? I think this is a telling story here, just with the setbacks and the availability of space that's there kind of tells us a story that this is probably not where we can really locate in the future because it just doesn't allow enough space.
Is also one thing I didn't, when I was reviewing it this morning, I didn't really point out is if we move, you know, the proper, or the center of the screen there is currently being used mostly for storage and we would have to push all that to the north. That's already being used for parking and storage, so that would really cramp our outside storage space as well. So I forgot to allude to that earlier.
Yeah.
There have been previous discussions at the planning site in the past that, you know, do we look at a multi-story building to better take advantage of the space in terms of office space and so forth. But once that 50-foot setback entered the picture, that even further cramped that idea, and it just doesn't seem feasible from a planning side. But again, I wanted to get the input of the full commission on this.
Just one question. And, you know, I'm really... would like to know more. You know, I know that we talked about this in detail so many different times, but what was the idea behind originally to have it in this location? What was the thinking? This is, you know, in terms of, because I realized there was several properties that already, the utility has already owned from this, and there was an idea, you know, to make it in this area. What was, you know, did they have all this information at that time, or it's just a new development or something that just came?
I believe that one of the, thank you for that question. I believe that one of the, I guess, drivers to consider an adjacent location was that they wanted to remain what they felt was downtown. And partly for, I think, the ease of use for customers, that there wouldn't have been a move. Those sorts of things. Forgot where I was going with this. that was one of the driving factors. The other thing that was not really delved into was actually seeing what was underground in 2010. There was a lot of assumptions when they drew pictures and planning and thoughts that, you know, they were assuming that they could get the setbacks and the things moved and those sorts of things. After looking at it and with all the departments, especially the line department, with how we can get trucks in and out, and that was one of the first discussions that we looked at here a couple years ago, is that, you know, getting big equipment into long skinny buildings and turning to get out, you know, wasn't really feasible, and then we started diving into more. So, but to answer your question, I think they just, I guess maybe a sense of community or a sense of the history of the utilities to keep it where it was made sense at that time.
It seems to me there's a lot of obstacles and, you know, why someone didn't look at, you know, looking at this picture is the whole.
Commissioner Matter?
Commissioner DeBleek.
Yeah, I think when you look at the graphic you have up there right now, I don't think that information was totally available in 2010. I think part of the assumption was going to make was that you could build with a zero setback, which would open up a whole lot more property for a building. Here you're winding up these, you say, these long skinny buildings or that's able to be built on. I think part of the thought too was that even Benson Avenue would be able to be closed, and we could build over the top of that back in. And maybe it was part of the assumption that the commission made at that time, which this new information and is going to change some of those assumptions. And I don't know if there's, you could probably look at some variances to the building code, but I don't know if we want to be the one to set that standard that without the 50-foot setback on Highway 12, if something comes along where they want to change the road, then we're blocking any future development along that state highway as well. So I guess, I don't know, I think your recommendation is that we change course a little bit. And with this information, I don't know if we have any other alternatives other than to do that, so.
John? Thank you, Commissioner Matter. Commissioner DeBleek touched on the bulk of my points that I was going to point out. However, there is one additional that I would like to point out, and that's back in 2010 when you go through the report. Back then, the consultant that was utilized looked at multiple alternatives, staying in the building as one of them, but they looked actually at rebuilding this. They looked at a greenfield and looked at rebuilding on this area that we are talking about here. So there's multiple options looked at that time. And, you know, we can make the assumption that with not having a clear directive of where they're going, it made sense to buy those properties as they come up to keep your options open without understanding the limitations that we have here. So, thank you, Commissioner Matter.
So at this point, staff is kind of looking at two different things. One is, you know, do we look at turning down this particular available property? And then the other is, if so, do we look at what it would take to now divest ourselves of some of the existing property that we do have? On the planning side, with discussion, I think we felt comfortable that it probably makes sense to turn down this current property that's available. However, we weren't quite comfortable yet saying, okay, let's take that next step to start already divesting of the existing properties. We felt that maybe there's some value in sitting on that for a little bit, just for the sake of the unknown of what might be coming up in the future here. We felt that it would be okay to hang on to that for a little bit of time and then make that decision down the road, as it became more clear whatever our future plans might for sure be, we could make that decision then. So that's kind of our recommendation at this point. I don't know if there's any additional final questions or discussion, or otherwise, I guess at this point, I would make a motion that we direct staff not to pursue this particular new property that would be available.
I'll second.
A motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? That passes. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate your update. All right, the August 2017 power supply report. Michelle.
Thank you, Commissioner. Looking at the power supply comparison graph between August 2016 and 2017, you will see that August power supply cost was $58.30 per megawatt hour. This is a 5.7% increase from last year. Factor was transmission costs in 2017 were $7,998 higher than in 2016. Any questions on that graph? Okay, looking at the budget versus actual bar graph right below, you will see that the August actuals were 2.5% above the budget for August. And then looking on the very next page, the real-time LMP averages in August, the average was $22.43, which is $4.49 lower than in 2016. The day-ahead LMP average was $23.61, which is $2.84 lower than last year. The gas prices in August were at $3.96 a decatherm. September was at $3.75 a decatherm, and October is at $3.68 a decatherm. Any questions? Okay. That's all I have.
Looks good. Thank you, Michelle. All right, item number six, we have an update on the LED street lighting project. Todd.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Is this on or? Yeah, it should be on. I'm just going to give you an update on the LED streetlight. As you all know, we started switching those out, and back in 2014, they had looked at a bunch of different styles, and I have the two different styles we have up there. The Evluma is the one on the right. Those are the ones we're putting in the residential areas, and they are replacing the high-pressure sodium 150-watt bulbs or 150-watt heads. The other one is the Green Cobra. Those are replacing the 250-watt heads that are on the arterial streets. And one of the big things that we were looking at as replacing, and it's also power consumption, but maintenance on these and the life of these are a lot better. And, you know, to reduce on truck rolls, when you have a bulb that goes out or an eye, a photo eye that goes out, you have to roll a truck out there, and we replace both of them at that time, and we're reducing the truck rolls on these. And we've got about 3,300, including the walk path lights, and we're about a third of the way done, so we're right on schedule, probably about a six-year plan yet, and we should be... some of the other areas, like on First Street, we replaced a bunch of them down Wilmer Avenue. There was some issues with the voltage that we had down there. They were all coming out of one unit, so we replaced the transformer that was stepping that voltage up, so we ended up changing all those at that time. So we had a bigger increase this year, and so we're at about 1,000 that we've replaced. So are there any questions on it, or?
Todd, thank you for the update. I'm curious, have we run into any issues with any failures on any of these at all?
Not as of yet, no. And this is, they've been out probably two to three years we started putting these out. I know on like the photo eye or the bulb, we've had issues in the past with sometimes they would last a year, sometimes 6 months for whatever reason. They are under warranty for a year, the bulbs and eyes. But when you're rolling a truck out there to replace it after 6 months or a year or even 2 years, it gets quite costly to, so these we haven't had any issues with them. They have been really perceived well by the community. I was expecting a lot more calls than what I've been getting about them, and I think they're, people are used to seeing LED lights. I think a lot of people want to look down the street and see all the lights, but these are putting the light right down on the street where it's supposed to, not illuminating around the area as much as what the old ones were. So I think it took some time for people to get used to that, and it's been perceived really good.
What's the expected life expectancy for each unit?
They're 10 to 20 years is what they're expecting, probably, without any truck rolls,
Todd, if I can interject quick.
Yep.
I know for sure the Evlumas have a 10-year warranty, and the expected lumens, that they rate them by how many hours of lighting. That equates to about 25 years on a smaller unit. I believe that the larger unit was similar. Not 100% sure on the 10-year warranty on the larger unit, but the smaller unit had a 10-year warranty.
And then I know, sorry, at one particular time, I don't know if it's at midnight for some of these lights, I've seen that they go to a reduced power. Are we doing that for all of those or some, or how are we deciding where and when to do that?
We are doing it on the residential lights. They are at 100% until 1 o'clock, then they're reduced to 50%. And that is more cost savings through power and reduce lighting. If we started out at that and we haven't had any complaints or anything on that, so we will continue to do it as that, and we will address it in the future if we start getting people wondering about it or complaining about not enough light in this certain area.
At 100% power, how much less power do these bulbs use than the old-fashioned ones?
They take about 6 amps as opposed to the high-pressure sodium are about an amp and a half or 1.8 amps on some of them, and that's on the 150. So it's a considerable amount of savings.
Okay. John, you have a point?
Mr. Mayor, thank you. I was going to ask Todd or Kevin to touch a little bit on the eye. The question you asked about the eyes, touch a little bit about how long we need the eyes in there and before the computer just knows the lighting program.
Yeah, the one of the components on the old high-pressure sodium one was the eye, and they would expected life of those are 5 years. These have an integrated eye that is not replaceable, but it's got an onboard sensor in there that computer that it will learn after 21 days where that light is. Each one of these lights has a serial number, and it will learn where it is geographically, and it will, if the eye fails, it will continue to come on and off after 21 days. It will remember that cycle with daylight savings time. So if a lot of them are failing, obviously there's going to be a time when they're probably going to be coming on or staying on later than normal because they are daylight savings time. But we've had them out for a couple of years now and we haven't had any issues with it. And each one has that serial number, and that's how we can program each one to go off at 50% at 1 o'clock, you know, so we can fine-tune certain areas that we can, we have the ability to adjust them at certain areas.
Particular units, the program them with a little bit like a tablet.
Okay.
You put them up, you can program them individually or bang or that's where you set your on and off time, your percentages. They also, if we do have an issue in the future with them, you can actually drive up to them if it's staying on or didn't come on. It'll actually send you a trouble code right to the tablet, and you can diagnose it right from there.
So you can make adjustments right from the street rather than have to go up in the truck.
Yep. I found it actually kind of funny. One day I was sitting, I can't remember where it was, I was having lunch, and I got a notification on my cell phone and said that there were Wi-Fi networks available. So just for the heck of it, I just clicked on it, and so one of them said Evoluma, so that the light was actually sending a, it's out there. So this particular unit, we talked about photo eyes, this particular unit still uses the old style twist-in photo eye, and that has that potential failure in it. Since we purchased these, technologies changed enough. Now they still use a twist-in photo eye, but the photo eyes now have gotten the technology, or they already do, and they will soon come down in price because they're a little bit too expensive for us just yet. But I would say in the next 4 to 5 years, it might be something that we may want to go back in and add, or just an option. The photo eyes you can get for these units now, you can control just like those units. You'll be able to dim the lights, and it would actually work with our census software for our meters. So, you know, Stacy could sit with her evil fingers and type in and mess with people's lights if she so chooses to. We could dim those arterial streets and those kind of things. That was not the choice originally because we wanted that on those streets all the time. That technology
So with those capabilities, and since you mentioned that they're broadcasting their own wireless SSID, have we had any issues or are we aware of any hacking?
No. The units are pretty secure as far as that way. You have to, their license. We had to purchase the license with the laptops or with the tablets. I'm sorry. We did have one issue with one tablet and that was replaced. So far, we've been very impressed with those units and what you can do with them and how they work. And like you say, that we don't want people to run around their smartphones or their lights.
Right.
They can't do that.
Dimming those lights, is this sort of, you have to do manually or time-wise, and then after that, is it automatically something that controlled by motion, or is it just something that you have to set it up ahead?
It's just controlled by time. I believe it's midnight, not 1 a.m. that they go down. Because I've actually been outside and seen the one across the street from me, dim. Just like that, dim for, and I believe we have set the dim at 50% power, so from 70 watt down to 35 watt. It still actually throws pretty good light, but it's shining in the windows, those sorts of things.
How, my concern was, how about the security? Is this, when you look at it, because I haven't really experienced it, how dimly they can be, what about some sort of security or something that if something, too dark, that...
I personally don't feel that they're too dark. In fact, like I said, that when I was up on toilet paper control last fall, for my daughters in high school, so homecoming week, stay up and control the, keep the kids out of the yard. That's when I first saw that it actually dimmed the one kitty corner of my house on the corner. And I was actually impressed with how much light was still
out there. Okay.
Still there. I felt that it was sufficient enough that it wasn't an issue. I know that when Nick and the guys in Todd's crews first put these up, I believe that they were adjusting them down to about 35%, 35% until it actually got to where the guys felt it was a concern that there wasn't enough light. So at 50, we felt it was still plenty of light, and obviously that's our, for those close next 4 hours, our usage can have.
Do we have any sort of quality control in place where the guys do check some of these at night just to run through neighborhoods and see if things are shining where they should and at a level they should and so forth?
Yeah, thank you for the question. We do have on Thursday nights the person that is on call, he goes around for 2 hours and checks street lights, and it's either on the south side or the north side. They alternate, so they see the lights and they have a list of them. And from my knowledge, we haven't had any of the Evluma, or the Green Cobra ones on them list yet. So it's usually, it's an eye issue or a bulb issue, and that's when we go out and replace them with this.
Thank you, guys. Yep. Any other questions?
Commissioner Madden?
Yeah.
Todd, you had mentioned that you've replaced 1,000 of these this year?
Yeah.
Is that a typical or is that atypical right now?
That's the last 2 years.
Oh, over the last 2 years, so we've replaced 1,000.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you anticipate, now are you replacing a lot where the bulbs are burnt out, or do you have a, I'm assuming you've got a schedule on which areas, which neighborhoods you're replacing? And
yeah, at this point, we're just going with the ones that are failing, whether it a bulb or a head or even an eye, we'll put those up. There are some areas like 17th Street where we had to replace those poles for the work that they did down there and for the street project, and we put in LEDs in replace of that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? All right. Thanks, Todd and Kevin. Appreciate that. Item number 7, authorization to add Bremer Bank to the list of financial service providers. Denise?
Thank
Thank you. This came about, John and I have been reviewing our investment policy and reviewing our investments and our diversification of them, and we would look to get authorization to add Bremer Bank to our list of authorized banks to invest with.
All right, so staff is looking for a motion to approve. Does anybody want to offer that motion?
That motion.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Just a question, Commissioner Madden. Denise, do we have certain statute we have to follow with investment types?
Yes, we do, and that is part of the policy, and that's what John and I have been reviewing to make sure everything is up to date and current as to what those statutes are and that the policy and that we are following that.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? All right, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And that passes. Last, John, we're down to the General Manager's Report.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. The first item on the General Manager's Report is an outline of the discussion topics for a joint meeting with the city coming up next week, Tuesday. This has been in your packet at prior meetings. This is the final iteration from the Planning Committee's last meeting. First item on there, we've asked Mr. Scott to address the responsibilities of the commission. We felt that was important, and we have a number of new staff, number of new commissioners, as well as a number of new council members. Mr. Scott has agreed to do an overview of the commission's role, and then followed by the agenda items as you can see there in the agenda. I don't know if there's any questions on those agenda items that you would like me to go into detail in preparation of the meeting. I believe that Commissioner Lemire and Commissioner Mattern plan on presenting these topics here, and we'll field questions as they come up between the commission and staff. We'll also have the key staff there as well. Okay, if there's no question on that, then we'll go on to the rate comparisons. Planning Committee asked that with this agenda so that we could better inform the council of the impact it would have to our customers, their property taxpayers. This line iteming of the intergovernmental transfer or the pilot fee, franchise fee, whatever we want to refer to it as. So what you have in your packet would be those scenarios. The first one is on the electrical side. We have three different residential customers, three different commercial customers, and three industrial customers, low, medium, and high usage customers. That would be the impact over the two-year transition from the franchise fee being on the utility bills. And if you go to the next one, that would be the water side as well. Same scenarios, residential, commercial, industrial, and three different customers, large, medium, and large volume on the water side. And then, as Commissioner Mattern indicated earlier, the timeline, the commission set the hearing, public hearing, for giving consideration to the rates for our next commission meeting. When you look at the timeline that it takes to go through the process, we need to keep the process moving. So, pending the outcome of our meeting with the council next Tuesday, there is a planning commission meeting set up for Friday next week to take the information, the feedback that we received through the collaboration at that meeting, and then prepare a recommendation for the commission as a whole after our public hearing on the 13th. So if there's no questions on our joint meeting, I'll move on. Then the rest of the General Manager's Report lists upcoming meetings, what we have already scheduled, as well as additional meetings that we will need to schedule as we go forward. So unless there's any additional questions, that would conclude my update.
A lot of meetings coming up. A lot of work to be done.
Yes, there is.
That's good. Thank you, John. Any other business to come before the Commission today? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done, Justin.